Bekoza. I'm joined today. I'm Jared Ross. I'm joined by Dylan and Sean. How's it, guys? How's it going?
Hi, mate.
How's it, guys?
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a good one to chat about this weekend. Talking about the Champions Cup rugby that's just passed, and have a look towards the next week of action. I think we'll jump straight into it, and I've already been told by Cooks that we need to get stuck in with Finn Russell and how well he played on Friday evening. Did you catch the Russell game? What were your thoughts? Do you think Saints have anything to bounce back on this weekend, or are they pretty much done and dusted in the competition?
I mean, what an absolutely unbelievable performance from Finn Russell. Just outstanding. Pretty much the complete performance that you want from your fly half. Probably one of my player of the week, along with George Ford, who I thought also did really well for Leicester Tigers. Finn Russell was outstanding against the Northampton Saints. It was just an incredible performance, the way he just absolutely tore that defense to shreds and was just everywhere on attack. It's going to be a very tough ask for Northampton to bounce back from this, but they have got Ulster in the next round, which they might have a better opportunity against. Obviously, it's always tough when you go down, when you lose in the manner that they've lost, to just sort of pick yourself back up again. But they'll know that they were up against a really, really good racing team, filled with internationals, filled with top players. So if anything, they'll know that. And I think when you look at this Ulster team, they probably have a better opportunity against them. If they can pick themselves up from this loss. I mean, Northampton aren't a bad side. That they should have the experience in their squad to around their squad to say, listen, it was just a bad performance. Let's put it behind us and let's pick ourselves up and go again on Friday, I think.
Yeah, I don't think you're far off with that. I also seem to think of their team as a very Hurricanes Super Rugby team, and being coached by Chris Boyd probably puts them in that situation. And I think they can bounce back. It'll be interesting to see. But what else did you think about Racing? Tala has a big thing that they don't have a tight five. What did you think of their tight five performance this week? And maybe a special mention for their back row with Lorraine scoring a hat trick.
Yes, absolutely. You've got to mention Wenceslas Loré scoring that hat trick. That tight five was, they really did pitch against Northampton. They were really, really, really solid in all departments. I thought Bernard Leroux as well, getting through a very good game. I don't think there's too many places you could actually criticize Racing for, that it was pretty much the complete performance.
And for you, Sean, if we move a little bit away from Finn Russell, and we can have a little word about Kirtley Beall. I thought he was excellent in running lines off of Finn and sort of being that double playmaker. We usually see it at 10 and 12, but it's nice to see it at 10, 15 again.
Welcome to everyone. That display on Friday was incredible. But I thought, and I'm glad that you brought me in to talk about KB, because I was totally gonna discuss it. He was really, really cooking. The two of them, the 10-15 axis, if we can talk about it as much, was flipping brilliant. They were on the same page. I thought a massive part in that whole backline working, because obviously Finn Russell and Kirtley Beall are getting all the love, but I thought Galfiku was essentially the glue that, like, if you could, it's almost disrespectful to say that he was the glue. He had a really good game, but I really thought he linked well with everyone, and I thought it was incredible. I thought also just a little off the topic, but little Saffa's abroad punch. But I thought Anton Breslow came in late at five for his first start after his move from Warriors. I thought he had a phenomenal game. Like I really thought he worked hard, but yeah, the backs were cooking, and it's amazing that Rustin were so good, and then Vermi Vakatawa was almost, I wouldn't say he was quiet. I think he just wasn't he wasn't really imposing himself like he normally did. So what's great to see is that he could actually play a supporting role where everyone always looks at him as the main man, the pioneer, the semi Radradra role where everything revolves around him, where it doesn't. And his supporting role was key and also very alarming for anyone who's going to play against Rustin or against France, because you can't essentially say, listen, you've got to man mark Vakatawa out of the game and then you'll be fine, because now he plays another role.
Yeah, I think you got it spot on there by calling him a supporting role in that performance. The one thing I do think we need to talk about is what on earth was Sam Matavesi doing? I hailed him the last time he played for Fiji because he looked like a world-class hooker, and then this week he wants to kick the ball in the first 5 minutes. Sharky, I know you're normally at back, but what on earth was going through his mind there?
Yeah, sheesh. And I also quite rate him. So he definitely, I think I've seen enough of him to know that he's a lot better than that, but he really fell apart, for lack of a better way of putting it. Maybe that's a little bit harsh. But yeah, he had a couple of shockers. The thing is maybe it was around the place where he was like, I've got given so much freedom, I can do what I want, and then it comes wrong, and then he feels like he needs to overcorrect, and then that went wrong as well. So it's a tough one. I mean, he got, 50 minutes? He played for 50, and he made quite a few errors, but I still think that he's good enough, and I really do feel that he's got the goods to go further, but yeah, he did have a little bit of a mare.
Yeah, I just found it quite surprising. He worked under Rory Best with Fiji, and I think Rory would have been disgusted by that first kick. But yeah, I do agree. He's a hell of a player. I think
Rory's a hooker. If ever anyone he coaches kicks, they're dropped.
So, yeah, exactly.
Let's be honest.
Exactly. He's not like Keith Wood. He's very different. Very, very different. But I think we can move on swiftly. And Dylan, I'll give this one to you first. And we can talk about the World Player of the Year absolutely carving it up at Cardiff's Arm Park. What did you think of Antoine Dupont? And was there any other Toulouse players that stood up for you?
Sorry, just having issues getting my mic off mute there. Yeah, I mean, what a way to cap what a way for DuPont to cap his 2021 Player of the Year award just with that performance. It was just absolutely brilliant. I mean, shame, Cardiff tried their best, and they, to their credit, with all the players they were missing through COVID, they held on bravely. I thought they were quite brave in their defense there, even not that they were entirely accurate, but they tried. And unfortunately, it's just DuPont, you know. What can you do against him when he starts weaving that magic? He's just absolutely sensational. The way he was almost a bit of a one-man show there putting on. I thought he was really, really good.
And were there any other players that really stood out for me from Toulouse or Cardiff, just overall in the game? You are mute there again, Dylan. Sorry.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you can hear you now.
Oh, okay, good. Sorry, it's just my Wi-Fi is playing up at the moment a little bit there. Yeah, it was just a solid performance from Toulouse, I thought. They were, I thought that Inter backed it really, really well at the far half. I thought that it was just a really, really complete game from them.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Sean, I think you'll agree with me that when DuPont plays well, Intermac plays well, and no matter who's outside of him at 10, they sort of combine well. Yeah, do you have any thoughts on the game? What do you think of how Toulouse are faring so far? I know it's a bit unfair to compare them to a weakened Cardiff side, but do they have the goods to go again and win it? And are they missing Colby?
Yeah, I think I thought they were great. I mean, obviously, it's really hard to look at DuPont and try and say, you know, bad things. Like, he was incredible. But I, and yes, I mean, every good 10 needs a good 9, and when your 9 is world class and your 10 is also world class, it's great. But if there's someone that I could really sort of mention and say, listen, was incredible in the backs that wasn't their 9 or 10, it would be Peter Aki at 12. Man is a machine. I think I'll probably have a crush on the guy. Like, I think he, like a rugby crush, I think he's incredible. He's such a great player. And he monstered guys. I thought on the game as a whole, I thought Toulouse probably thought that they would get the rub of the green a little earlier, and I think, like, all the kudos that Cardiff have got during the game and afterwards have been well worth it. They were flipping world class. They really, really, really put their hands up. They had time to prepare and really, like, they really made Toulouse work hard for it, which they did eventually, and they got over the line and well. But I'm sure they probably were looking at, in deep down, I think they're probably looking at about 50 plus. With regards to not having Colby there, I think it's quite controversial. But I think that even if they had Colby, they would have they maybe would have got a try or two more. I mean, I'm South African, so he totally would have added more value. But I think that they would have done a little bit better, but not massively better. I mean, that Madar 15, who's pretty handy, and I'm pretty sure he would have started. That Bonneval at 14, and they had Lebel at 11. So the only place that Chesson is going to start is at 14 ahead of Bonneval. And I don't think he would have ramped the score up by 20 points.
No, I think that's fair enough. You would always want a team with Ches and Colby than a team without him. So again, I can agree with that. Sean, I'll throw it back to you. But do you have any words for Cardiff legend Dan Fish? He made his comeback again and retired and came back on and retired again.
Absolute legend. What a man. So I mean, we chatted a little bit earlier on today, and I was like, I thought, you know, who's retired more than Dan Fish? And I mean, he is a Cardiff legend, and they brought him back because they were, and everyone knew about it, they were in trouble after being in South Africa and having all the borders closed and whatnot, and they brought him back, and then he went off to, like, it was almost like a standing ovation. I mean, it was like definitely deserved after the game that he put in. He really did have a good game, and so did the whole Cardiff side. And then had to come on again afterwards. So, like, I don't know, I singled out Andy Good as the guy that retired most, and you said that it was Brian O'Driscoll. So I don't know who's retired more times, but. What a great way to bow out if he does. Perhaps he'll be required to come in again this week. But what a legend! And I mean, he's basically, like, reinstated his hero status at Cardiff. So I'm super happy for him.
Yeah, I suppose it's nice when you can go out on a high, even if it's was on the wrong end of the scoreboard, as long as the fans appreciate you, I suppose, and you go out on your own terms. Just before we carry on, if you guys have any questions or you want to add your own points, please do feel free to request to speak and, yeah, hit us up with any questions. But yeah, we'll move on to the next game. And Dylan, you already touched on how George Ford did, but that Leicester Tigers machine just seems to be rolling through every single team that comes their way now. I think it's 13 wins on the trot. And they were actually going into the game against Bordeaux as underdogs. How do you think they performed? What do you think Borthwick's doing different there? And yeah, is the South African influence having a big impact?
Just getting myself off mute there again. Yeah, I think there's a real steel about this Leicester Tigers team, I think. I think that's really a big thing that's changed about them, is there's just this iron sort of side to them. They're very strong in the pack. I thought Jasper Visser had a good sort of 50 minutes for them, obviously then replaced by with Marco van Staden coming on. But I was very impressed with the way that they controlled the game tactically as well, because this is a very, very good Bordeaux team. Louis Picamar, Cameron Wokey, Kane Douglas, they've got attacking threats with Ben Lamb on the wing. So it's a very good Bordeaux team. You could understand why they went into the game as underdogs, quote unquote, but this was a performance that really, I think, solidified their status as maybe one of the favorites to claim the European trophy this year. I mean, it was a real, real statement win that they could go to Bordeaux and win this game and sort of control the game as they did.
Yeah, I think you spot on with that. I do agree. This Bordeaux team beat Toulouse last weekend, so it was, yeah, they did go into the game hot. Sean, I don't know if you agree with this, but this Leicester side do seem to remind me of the Bulls of old, where you had Farid Aprea and it was between Mornay Steyn at a stage and Derek Hogarth as well. That they're just powerful up front, and your 9 and 10 are just pulling the strings and making it difficult tactically for the opposition. Do you agree with that? Am I a bit far off with this one?
Yeah, listen, I think it's a massive shot comparing Van Poortvliet to De Pryor, but... I'm just winding up though. I thought I really thought that the way that they went about it was great. Like if you look at their side, especially their pack and their starting pack, I mean Genge and then Martin, who's still only 20, and then Visser, those are like the big boys in the backs, you know. In the pack. And those are the guys that started. And I mean, and I really thought that they managed it well. The thing is I thought George Ford actually had a little bit of a lucky packet on the weekend. Like he had a good game and he nailed some kicks, but he missed a couple of kicks to touch. And he had about a 10-15 minute period in the game where he was a little bit off with his kicking, which was a bit odd. And remember that they started with Bryce Hegarty at fullback. They have a side where you can look at it, especially the starting side this weekend, where they had a side and you were like, well, they're totally beatable. But then they still like really showed a lot of metal and really worked it out and sorted it out. François Trindouk didn't have the best game for Bordeaux. But, I mean, Bordeaux, like, if you look at their front row alone, it's Poirot, Manadier, and Tammy Afuna. Like, that's massive. And then in their locks with Douglas and Jomez, or Holmes, I don't quite know how to pronounce it. But, like, and then they've got, like, Wokey and Pickermoles in the loose trio. Like, they had a proper pack. And they were they didn't, their pack didn't own it. And they're playing at home and you'd expect more from them. And I just thought, I think it's, I mean, Dylan's like said that they're going to, like, they're really in with a shout. That's a massive statement, but you can't really argue after what they did this weekend. And still, I mean, go away, win at Bordeaux, win in a tight game. They were literally on their 5 meters from their try line. They were defending the last 3 or 4 minutes, and really were under the pump. I mean, they were leading. They bagged a try with a few minutes left, I think. Or they were comfortably in the lead, and Bordeaux got it back in the mix with a few minutes to go. So the last, like, they're really under the pump, and they managed to hold off, which is massive in France, especially against a side like Bordeaux. So, yeah, very interesting result, and it totally pushes Leicester up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do feel that Bordeaux seems to have a bit of a soft underbelly when it comes to European matches. I remember last season when they lost in the semi-finals, they just seemed like they were there to win it, and they just sort of let it go. But yeah, talking about soft underbellies, we can talk about one that doesn't have a soft underbelly. Dylan, what did you think of Leinster? They're always favourites going into the Champions Cup. They're always there and thereabouts. They seem to just roll over Barca quite easily. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, shame. I mean, the Barca side is really, really struggling at the moment, and it was kind of what you expected. Leinster underlying their status is... They came into this tournament as favourites, and they've underlined their status as favourites, I think, with this win. Just absolutely cutting this Bath side to absolute shreds. 45-12, you can't really argue with anything that they, with what Leinster did. I think it was a really, really solid performance from the whole team, you know?
Yeah, they often refer to it as just the blue machine, and then it just churns over and wipes out anyone in front
exactly.
of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I just hope it's not a clear run for them to the URC title and Champions Cup semi-final. I think anything outside of semi-final would be a failure for them.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, one hopes that they do get challenged a bit more by the European sides. Maybe Toulouse could get in there, or Exeter could get in there, and if the draw so permits it, they could get a challenge from one of those two teams. You never know, Munster might give them a bit of a run if they have everyone fit and going and firing at all cylinders. But yeah, they are one of the favourites, you know.
Yeah, and Sean, I'll throw this to you. The Irish side seem to have a good weekend, a full house of wins, a dominant one for... Leinster overall, and then Ulster going to the Marcel Michelin to pick up a victory. That's massive.
Huge. Some people might talk about Clermont and say they're not the powerhouse they used to be, but it's still like going to Loftus and beating the Bulls. They had... At one stage, Clermont had the longest winning streak at home, which lasted, I think, 2.5 seasons in all competitions. So going there and winning is massive, absolutely massive. And for anyone who says otherwise, I'm going to just stick my neck out and say, listen, they don't know what they're talking about. Because it's not like they ran away with it. It's not like they dominated them 45-3. I mean, it was a 23-29 result. To go there and win is huge, really is. And, Leinster, 45-20 win over Bath, I really thought they could have done better. On paper, we expected more. I thought, ironically, Bath came to the party, even though it's a 45-20 loss. We probably expected 70 points to Leinster. I thought the Ulster result was probably... probably the one of the weekend. They really, really dominated. Munster did well, and Connacht, a massive win at home against Stud. But yeah, back to Ulster, I really thought they cooked. I thought their midfield was really, really good. Like, comfortably up there with being maybe the best midfield pairing in the tournament on the weekend. Maybe Russing could put their hand up, but I thought the best midfield pairing. But a big shout out to JJ Hanrahan, who plays for Clermont. I thought he had an outstanding game, and for him to have a game like that and still lose against Irish opposition was quite interesting.
Yeah, JJ has been excellent since getting to Clermont. I mean, keeping Camille Lopez out of the team is a thing in itself. He's made that jersey his own in over the last decade or so at Clermont. But yeah, sticking with the 10s, I see Jack Carty had another excellent game for Connacht. And it just seems like whenever Connacht play well, Jack Carty is at the forefront of it. And Dylan, do you think it's time they bring him back into the Ireland squad? Does he offer something a bit more, something a bit different to Joey Carberry? We know Sexton's getting up there in age, but he's still the captain and still the go-to. Do you think they need to try Jack out as another successor, or do you think it's time to move on to other options?
Well, I mean, it's fair enough. I think if he's playing well and if he's putting his hand up and if he's staying consistent for Connacht, then yeah, I mean, they have to really start. I mean, the thing is with Ireland, they have to start trying out their options and looking a bit beyond Sexton. And I mean, if the big thing is for Carty to keep putting his hand up and keep performing the way that he is, and if he keeps that consistency, then Ireland will probably have no choice but to give him option, especially if they want to evolve their options beyond Johnny Sexton.
Yeah, sorry, I was struggling with the mute button there. Sean, if we go back to some of the Premiership sides, we say Bath didn't have a great game this weekend, but Exeter gave my favourite Bokpelier quite a bit of a hiding over there. But a Bokpelier side without Andre Pollard, without Paolo Garbisi, are they taking this competition seriously? Are they shifting their focus to the top 14? Or did they just decide that this wasn't the game for them and they're going to target other games?
Very interesting. Just the three players you mentioned alone, they're huge. Those three players will be named in their Matchday 23 at any other big game. So very, very interesting. Interesting shouts. Like, I don't think that they're not interested in the competition. I think it might have been a tactical decision and a gamble to say, cool, we are going to Exeter. We are playing them in England. The French sides historically don't play well overseas. So not overseas, away from home, which obviously is overseas as well. But I think maybe they said, cool, we'll send another side and then let's see what we can get out of it. And if we don't, we can always, the tournament now is very different to the way it was in the past with the five pools, and you had to literally almost win every single one of your games to make the knockouts. Now there's a little bit more wiggle room. So I think that it might be a tactical gamble in terms of how they approach the tournament.
Yeah, well, that's a brave one, if you're going to put it that. Getting a good 30 points hiding, and that hurts your points difference to start off with. If we move on to another team that's got quite a lot of sappers in it, Dylan, what did you think of Sale Sharks' performance against Ospreys? I saw that Samuel Burton was drooling over Tom Curry again. Do you think they are in the mix at all for the latter stages of the competition? Did Ospreys show a bit more fight than maybe we expected, or what's your thoughts on the performance of both teams?
Sorry, yeah, it was a little bit of a game of two halves. Sale blitzing and Sale would have probably wanted a little bit more out of this game, especially since they had since they blitzed into that lead, sort of 21-0. They would have wanted a little bit more, but then Osprey certainly showed a lot of pride and a lot of character to keep fighting on and fight their way back in that second half. And I think Sale would have been disappointed a little bit with how they lost control of that game in the second half. With both Luat Diaga and Ben Curry getting yellow carded, I think they would have been slightly disappointed with that. But on the plus side, it was a quite a good performance from Tom Curry. Dan Dupree did well at number eight again. And at Ryan Janse van Rensburg, one of their try scorers, was also very solid at inside centre. He did pretty much everything you could ask from him. But I think Ospreys, they were surprising in that they showed that sort of character. I mean, any other side, you know, you're 21 down and you're kind of saying, well, the game's pretty much over. It's very difficult to get ourselves back into this. But they showed a lot of character to keep fighting on in that second half, I thought.
Yeah, I do think that that's where Sale Sharks are sort of falling off is that they're not quite ruthless enough. Alex Sanderson will want to fix that with having coached at Saracens, where they were quite happy to put 70 or 80 points on anyone that was in front of them. So I don't know what you think, Sean. Do you think that he's struggling to get that bite in the shark, if I can put it that way?
Nice one. I really thought that they were going to just absolutely disappear with it. They really looked the business. I thought Rowan had a great game at 12. I thought Rob Dupree at outside centre might have been a little bit anonymous. But having said that, is Rafi Quirk and AJ McGinty were classy. I thought Tom got man of the match and he played what just under 60 minutes in the game. I thought Tom Curry was incredible. I thought Ben Curry was really good. I thought Dan was really good. So like there were a lot of like great things to speak about. But I think the big thing is Ospreys really had the belief and of how to play and what they wanted, and they really were like dogged. Like they really just carried on. I thought Matt Prothero at 15 was really good. I thought he did the job really, really well. And Reece Webb at nine. Anscombe only played what I think he was subbed really early in the second half. But I know that he had a sort of so-so game. And I can't remember if he was subbed because he was injured or because of how things were going. But Thomas was pretty handy when he came on at 10. So yeah, it was interesting. I think this result will bother Sale more than it will bother Ospreys. I think they will maybe it might infiltrate like and put in a little bit more doubt. On another player that I thought was quite handy in the day, I thought Molyneux was pretty good at 11.
Yeah, Yard's always a good player to watch. I always find him quite enjoyable. Yeah, and it's nice to hear that our Bok boys, they are doing well. I've always been a fan of Rowan Jans van Rensburg, and he always seems to have his troubles with injuries. So I'm glad he got to put in a nice big performance and sort of help Sale to that win. But yeah, moving on, and I think, Sean, this was your favourite game of the weekend. With Munster taking on Wasps and both teams being absolutely ravaged with COVID and injuries, and they just had a whole bunch of youngsters filling up the squads, and they just went ham and tong at each other.
Oh, insane. Absolutely insane. Like, so just for everyone, just to kind of fill things in, we all, and Munster knew that Man City like were depleted, to say the least. But then they did have time to prepare. They chose to play the game and sort it out. Wasps were forced into 13 player stroke positional changes on the day of the game, which is massive, absolutely huge. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think there were 59 players unavailable for that game between both the sides on the day. I mean, that's huge. And what a game. What a game. I mean, the Wasps players came out. They basically said, listen, it's cool. We've made all these changes, but we're not going to lie down. And Munster had a lot of youngsters there. I mean, O'Mahony came in during the week and said that he's pretty sure that he played some guys who had training that could be kids of Keith Earls. So, yeah, that was quite a thing. I mean, both sides were really, really all basically just said, listen, this is what we got. We're going to go out and give it everything. And they did. And I think what I respect the most is O'Mahony's try-saving tackle, 85 seconds into 92 seconds into the game. So under 2 minutes into the game, he is literally chased down someone and tackled him into touch 5 meters from the try line. And that was basically how the first 2 minutes went, was just about everyone just throwing everything at it. And it didn't stop. And I know Munster won 35-14, but that game had so much more. You could write a book on the build-up to that game, on the actual game and the results. It was absolutely incredible. I thought Brad Shields, who had to move to number four lock, he got a red card 21 minutes into the game. I must say, I know I'm pretty outspoken with regards to cards and how I believe the laws should be pushed through and generally agree with him, but I thought that was massively harsh. The way the referee was so adamant that was a red, I thought there was a little bit of mitigation into it. I'm like happy to be corrected and stuff, but I really thought that impacted the game heavily. Not that that's a reason not to give a red card, like, don't get me wrong, but I thought Brad Shields was, and their captain was totally up for it. And I think had he stayed on, had that decision gone in Wasps' favour and he'd only taken a yellow card, I think that we would have been in probably for the game of the year. I think we would have been talking about that game for years and years to come. But now we can talk about what we saw and how it was. And I thought Wasps were incredible. I thought Munster were incredible. I thought both sides had opportunity to really push it on and win. And Munster came away with a decent win. But wow, there's some stories that will come out of that game for years to come for the players.
Yeah, and I agree with all your points, Sean. And the one thing I will say is that I was quite impressed with guys like Scott Buckley and Daniel Keke, that they thrown into the deep end, making their debuts in Champions Cup rugby. I mean, but for Europeans, this is the closest you get to Test rugby without playing Test rugby, and to get thrown in the deep end like that and still perform, I think that's a massive stepping stone for those players in their development. And they've sort of said to Jan van Kraan, listen, this is what I'm capable of. This is me. Give me a chance in the URC. Give me another chance in the Champions Cup. So yeah, Dylan, what did you think? Were there any other guys that really stood out for you in the game? How was your feeling overall of the two sides' performances?
Yeah, just as Sean said, it was just an absolutely incredible match. I mean, look at what giving youth, I know they were forced into it, but what letting the young guys just run out and do what they need to do, what they want to do, just look at what it produces. It's incredible. And I think both teams would have, I know they were, again, they were forced into it, but they would have gained from it. Both coaches have got a chance now to have a proper look at their depth of their squad and be reminded of the depth of their squad. And Thankfully, there were a lot of pleasing performances for both sides. As you said, Daniel Lekeke, I think he was getting his name sung in the stands during that performance, and it's unsurprising. I mean, 7 carries, 86 meters, a clean break. It was just absolutely brilliant from him. I thought Dalindi had a solid game at inside center. As you said, Scott Buckley was good. Thomas Young was good for Wasps at open side flank. I think both coaches, as I say, both coaches would have gained quite a bit from this. Having now got the opportunity to have a look at these young guys and throw them in the deep end, European rugby, club rugby doesn't really get much tougher than that, and in very difficult circumstances as well. And they've just, I think there's a lot of youngsters that came through with flying colours.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I do think it's great. I think sometimes the Irish sides can be a bit reluctant to throw in guys too early. So you see guys making their debuts at maybe 22, 23, where that's not always the case here in South Africa. We might throw them in just a little bit earlier. So I think for those guys, it was a massive opportunity that they sort of took with both hands. Yeah, and I'd like to move on to the La Rochelle Glasgow game, and I don't know how you saw it, Dylan, but it just seemed to die down in the last 20 minutes. It's almost like both teams sort of ran out of ideas or steam to get over the line and get points in the final 20.
Yeah, it was a bit of a grind of a match. I mean, You kind of, when you see these two teams come up against each other, you expected a bit more fireworks. I don't know, maybe that was just me expecting a bit too much from this game, but I expected a little bit more than what we had got from it. You know, I thought we'd see a bit more flash and than what we really saw in that game. But yeah, I think La Rochelle will be happy with the win. This Glasgow team can be tough to beat, but with the pack that they have. But I just think that, you know, even though it was a bit of a grind, they'll be happy to have come away with the win.
Sean, and you, what were your thoughts on La Rochelle's win? Do you think Rog will be happy about his team's performance? He'll be asking for more. We can talk a bit about Iha West. He's going to be heading off to Toulon. What did you think of his performance? Do you think he's a good fit for Toulon? What do you think of La Rochelle's chances going through in the rest of the competition? Last year's finalists, do they look like finalists again? Or are we seeing a bit of a transition period between Jono Gibbs and Ronan O'Gara?
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I'm on speak at the moment because my phone's charging. Yeah, it was very much a mixed bag. I definitely think that there's a bit of a transition period happening because, like, Skelton had a good game. I thought Wardy had a good game. Like, I thought a lot of the players in both packs had decent games. I thought Aldridge had an excellent game, but having said that, Jack Dempsey also had a good game. It's his second good game on the trot. Really handy. Dog had a good game, and I just, it was very interesting how the game like sort of worked its way out. I thought EI West had a up and down game. He did the business, but didn't. Russ Thompson, ironically, had a pretty handy game, and I think Ali Price too definitely supported him and led in many ways, and what that basically allowed Carl Steyn and Josh McCurr to really like play. And it was such an interesting game, it was such a great fight at like looking at like it really could have gone down and anyone could have taken it. And it was an epic one, and yeah, it was a good win for La Rochelle, which they'll take it all out. But I think Glasgow would definitely, you know, to lose by 7 against a side like La Rochelle, who did everything that they did last year, and to lose by seven at their home ground, I thought was pretty good for them. I think Glasgow will take a lot out of it.
Yeah, I think Glasgow will take a lot more from that game than maybe La Rochelle will. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just the way I see it. I think that La Rochelle probably should have put a bit more on Glasgow. But yeah, moving on to one of my favorite games of the weekend was Harlequins versus Castries. And Quinn's coming away with a win, the first time Cass have lost at home since 2015 in the Champions Cup. Sean, you know Castries pretty well. They're a dogged side. They do not give up easily. And at home, they're a different beast. We say this a lot about French sides, but they really are. Especially when it comes to European rugby, they will fight dirty. They will do whatever they can to get that win. Is it a great result, a good result, or an unbelievable result for Harlequins? How do you see that for them going forward in the Champions Cup? And yeah, how good is it for the Londoners?
Yeah, this result fits happily in the middle between like a result and a great result, or like an unbelievable result. Like it's really little bit in the middle. I thought to go there and win, because Castries will do anything and everything it takes to win, and they've never ever been the side that you will both times that they won the top 14 in the last, I can't remember, like in the last decade-ish, their last two top 14 wins, I think had both come from them finishing outside of the top four and just sneaking into a playoff spot. So, you know, they're horrible to play against, with the greatest of respect to them, and I think, you know, Rory Cockett is the leader of that. He was lucky not to pick up a card. He had some serious words with the referee that everyone picked up on the ref mic. And the ref could easily have reversed the penalty, but didn't. And then on the way out of the tunnel to the start of the second half, he was still chatting to the ref. So you could see. So I didn't quite know how he managed not to spend an extra 10 minutes on the side. But I thought, Marcus Smith was good. I thought Andreas Hazen was a little bit better, but Hugh Jones had probably his best game in for Harlequins in his short stint there, and one of his best games at outside centre. Very handy. And I think, like, you know, the guys, Joe Marler played 70, you know, like he put in a massive shift. Hasn't Joe Marler just come off and not being able to play due to COVID? So for him to put in that sort of a shift is huge. So I think the result is massive for Quinns in terms of what it'll give them as a side in belief, which is weird to say for a current premiership reigning champions. But remember how they won the tournament last year. You know, they really were underdogs in every single one of their playoff games. They fought back hard in both the semi-final and the final to win it. So they are a side that really operates well on their belief, like, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and we will stick to it until someone, like, beats us and shows us that it doesn't work. And to go, like, to Castries and win is huge. So, yeah, the result in how they did it wasn't their best, and they could have probably done better. But what this will mean to them as a club moving forward in the tournament and in the premiership is huge.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Sean. They were almost said that, a lot of clubs say they were pretty much lucky to win the premiership. I'm not sure I quite agree with that. I think they had their game, they stuck to it, and they executed it brilliantly. Dylan, what do you think of Harlequins? Are they real contenders this season for the Champions Cup? Is it going to be more heartbreak for them once the games get a bit more difficult? And how do you rank this win against Castries? Is it a big one for them? And can Castries bounce back from this one?
Firstly, just on the win, I think Sean just summed it up all perfectly. I think it's going to do wonders for their mentality going forward into the competition. To be able to go to Castres and beat them is just absolutely massive. Even though the performance wasn't perfect, I mean, it's very difficult to put on a perfect performance against this Castres team, the way they just go at you hammer and tongs and never really let you get out of sight. So I think, yeah, it'll do wonders for them. I think we're still going to see more from them before we sort of say, listen, they're favourites for the Champions Cup. I think we're still going to see a little bit more from them going forward in the group stages, in the pool stages, should I say. If they can get through their pool, I mean, into the playoffs, then for absolutely certain, we've seen the way that they dealt with the pressure of the playoffs in the Premiership last season. So that they've shown that they can certainly, when they stick to what they know and what they do best, they've shown that they can pull off a very surprising result in the playoff stages. The key is just get for them to focus on the pool stages and get through their pool. And if they can get into the playoff stages, then it's anyone's game.
Yeah, I think in the same way that we say Castres never give up and are a dodgy team to play against because they all fight for everything. Harlequins are pretty much in the same boat. They just do it in a vastly different way to way Castres do it. Castres will grind out the win and Harlequins will play for the win and make it more attractive. Just before we close off, I think we need. It's just right that we touch on the Challenge Cup this weekend. And Sean, were there any results that really stood out to you? The one that's quite stark for me is Saracens going down to Edinburgh. I know both teams didn't put out their full strength 15s, but Saracens headed into the competition as clear favourites to win it, and they lose their first match to Edinburgh. What's your thoughts on the weekend's Challenge Cup results?
Yeah, it's a big one. I unfortunately wasn't able to watch the game, and I'm actually going to try and look for it. Because I believe, now this was coming from a Saracens fan, but I believe that there was some controversial moment at the end of the game where Saracens may have scored, and the TMO was having a look at it, and then they had to go back for something else. So quite interesting, but yes, massive result for Edinburgh. Big loss for Saracens. I think they would have rated themselves, and Mario Toje was doubtful for the game and not named in the match day 23 and pulled in either Friday or Saturday. I can't remember, but it was late. So yeah, so that was a big one. I think Gloucester losing to Lyon away from home, I thought it was quite a tight game. There were 6 points in it. I thought, obviously, Newcastle and Worcester played against each other and Newcastle winning at home. That's so-so. Biarritz beating Zebre in Italy. We expected that. I thought Dragons pushed Perpignan quite close. I think Dragons were in the mix for a while. It was a great comeback from Perpignan, if memory serves. And then I think other than Edinburgh winning, I think London Irish, Exiles winning and beating Pau away from home in France, 33-17 was huge. But yeah, the Challenge Cup's very interesting in terms of how people or clubs approach it. I think it's a bit of a lucky packet to start off. Come knockout places, then we can really lay down the marker and say, listen, cool, you know, they're really serious about this. I think they use it as an opportunity to test out a few things, maybe give a player a rest here and there. And the French sides, generally, they go the whole hog and use it as like a drafting system, where the other sides normally balance it out a little bit but don't name their full-strength side.
Yeah, I think the one that you did pick out there was Gloucester actually only losing by 3 points to Lyon. Lyon pretty much throughout their full-stack team. I think one of the biggest calls for them was Lima Sopawanga starting over Leo Berdue. Lima's just not the top dog just yet at the club. But I think otherwise, you're pretty much spot on there. Dylan, was there anything that stood out for you in the Challenge Cup this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sean summed it up really, really well. Again, as you say, Leon, Gloucester pushing Leon quite close. I think they could take a little bit of heart out of that, going to Leon and pushing them sort of to a only 6-point deficit. That was fairly impressive for Gloucester, especially with the side Leon put out. London Irish, that Sean touched on it as well. I mean, that was a really, really good win for London Irish, going to power it. Winning in the manner that they did with 33-7, it's just huge. That'll be big for them. And as we've said, Edinburgh getting that win against Saracens, I mean, that'll do, I think that'll boost their confidence in the URC as well, going forward.
Hey, gents, as we start wrapping that up, I'm going to put you both under the pump. And Sean, I'll start off with you. Let's call it. Let's have the finalists. Who's making it to the finals? I know the system this year makes it a bit more difficult. So, yeah, let's pick 4 semi-finalists and your winner for the Champions Cup.
Yeah, that's not acceptable, eh? Can we not like pick semi-finalists?
Okay. Yeah, pick your semi-finalists. 4 semi-finalists and your winner.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't even know how the whole thing's going to pan out. But I reckon the last 4 will be Leinster, I reckon Toulouse. I know it's a bit of a cop out. Leinster, Toulouse, Racing, and. Yo, this is a big shot, but I'm going to go with Munster. So those are the guys that I reckon will make the quarters. And I reckon Toulouse win it again.
Okay, so we got 2 French teams there and, excuse me, 2 French teams there and 2 Irish teams. So the Premiership isn't doing too well for Sean this season. Dylan, I'm going to throw the same question to you. Your 4 semi-finalists and your winner.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with, I'm going to say Leinster and Leinster will definitely go through. I think Toulouse will definitely go through to the semis. Difficult to say, but I think I do agree with Sean that Munster will make it in. And it's quite early, but Racing, Leinster, Toulouse, and Racing, Leinster, Toulouse, and Munster, I think will be the 4 that make it through. And if I have a thought, I think it's so difficult to call with just 1 because there's so much that could still happen. But I think it will be Toulouse that I think Toulouse will defend their title, if I'm being honest, if I'm really thinking about it.
Yeah, I struggle to
it's so difficult to call it stage.
I would say that Toulouse are going to go and defend their title. I am going to mix it up a bit. I think Leinster will definitely go through to the semi-finals. But I think Leicester Tigers will be the sole Premiership club that makes it that way. And I'd probably go with Racing as well. Gents, I just want to say thank you for the chat this afternoon, this evening. It was great to talk some Champions Cup rugby. And for all the listeners out there, please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're at Rugby Bits. And you can check out our website as well. We have plenty of content going up there. And just a thank you to our sponsors, Betcoza, for sponsoring us once again. Dylan, Sean, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you to the listeners as well.
Jared, thank you, mate. Dylan, was great to chat again. And to everyone that jumped on board, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Jared. Thanks, Sean. It was awesome to chat.